All right, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Free For All. I am your host, Big John, once again here on a Thursday night to talk about issues of interest to libertarians and most reasonable people out there. As always, I am joined in my endeavors, my holy endeavors, by none other than Mr. Hody Johns over there. Hodster, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. Happy to lead your crusade as commander of your army with my new Grumblings Media mug.
There you go. There you go. And we had not planned this, folks. Hody just got a little bit of a swag. But if you look underneath this on YouTube, you'll see our store there. So if you're interested in a mug or a T-shirt, help the boys out and order one. You'd be tossing us a few shekels. All right, you're watching Free For All right here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. You can catch us on X, Rumble, Facebook, YouTube, anywhere you can get this show. Catch it. We are taking questions in the chat, so feel free to pop your questions or comments in there. As always, try to keep the four-letter words to a minimum if you want to see your content on the screen. But otherwise, anything goes in terms of questions. Our guest tonight, we're very happy to have the newly elected chair of the California Libertarian Party, or the Libertarian Party of California. I'm not sure what the proper enunciation of that is, but
either way. Depends on where in California you are.
There you go.
Yeah.
Our guest tonight, the newly elected chair, Mr. Lauren Dean. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Happy to have you on board.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So let's get right to it. The California affiliate of the Libertarian Party, if not the biggest, one of the two or three biggest affiliates in the country for the Libertarian Party. So obviously a lot of attention on what happens internally in terms of libertarian politics in California. I believe, was it last year, the state convention for California drew a lot of controversy due to the folks that they invited, right?
Yes. Yes.
And certainly the former chair, Mr. Malagon, Adrian Malagon, had both his supporters and detractors. He was a lightning rod for a lot of issues coming around the Libertarian Party because he also served as secretary, I think, on the national committee for a while, or at least temporary secretary. All right, so let's start off with the obvious. Congratulations on your victory, Lauren. Tell us a little bit about yourself and just the Cali LP in general.
Well, I am a returnee to California, which is very rare. Mm. I grew up in Riverside, which is in Southern California, east of Los Angeles through the mountains towards the desert. Riverside's claim to fame as a town historically was as the country getaway for Los Angeles and the coasties. To get out into farmland, Riverside grew oranges, which was their big deal. And so coming out and hanging out amongst the citrus fields was a cool thing for people. But Riverside today, I mean, and when I was growing up in it, it's a city of 250,000 people. It's not like this is Hicksville or anything like that. This is so I grew up out here. I consider myself from California. I tell people I'm from California insofar as that's not going to get me attacked, because sometimes people respond viscerally to the idea that you're from California. When needed, I can tell people that I was born in Texas, so I've got dual citizenship for when they secede. But broadly speaking, I tell people that I'm from California. But I left the state in the early 2000s in search of a place to raise my kids, housing bubble and all of that was going on here in California. And I wound up in Oklahoma, and I was in Oklahoma for about 12 years. I worked in manufacturing, small town, population 5,000. Interesting place as a city kid to land in pretty rural Oklahoma, a town that was 12 blocks long. You know, that was the whole thing, with a big factory on the end. It was really a weird time capsule slice of America to live in a manufacturing small town in the Midwest. There's not a lot of those towns left.
Sounded like you were in the middle of a Bruce Springsteen song from the 80s.
I know, crazy. Yeah, but, you know, it was Oklahoma, so, you know, Bruce Springsteen would have to wear a hat and draw a little. Yeah. The company I was working for got bought in late 2019, and I've decided my kids were grown and gone. I was ready to start a new chapter of my life, and I said, I'm going to return to the land of my people. And I came back to California in November of 2019. just in time for everything to fall completely apart, just completely disintegrate in California and descending into lockdown hysteria, just a nightmare. I had discovered libertarianism in Oklahoma in about 2014. I discovered reason.com. It became kind of a regular work break read for me, and that led me to some other places, FEE.org and the Mises Institute. And, there's a variety. There's a whole web you're out there of things you can read. And so in my little town, I was like the only libertarian. I never met another one. There were theoretically 9 registered libertarian voters in the county where I lived, but I never met one. It just never happened. So for about 5 years, I was just like, I'm a libertarian. I was telling people, I'm a libertarian. That's what I do. And I put a sign in my yard and everything. And when I got back to California, I said to myself, I'm going to finally meet some libertarians. This is going to be great.
Right.
So I tracked down the local affiliate, figured out where their meeting was, wound up in this little diner in the desert, in the back room of a diner. There were 8 or 10 other libertarians there. I thought, this is amazing. This is like, there's like people here. This is going to be great. I mean, we're going to talk about liberty and freedom. It's going to be great. And then they got in a fight.
wait, you mean like a literal fisticuffs or
no,
argument?
No, but like a shouting match, big argument, right? Right in the middle of the meeting, some old guy at the meeting just lost his mind about, I don't even know what. I still don't know what. He was relitigating some beef that he had that was decades old. And I was shocked by that. In fact, he stormed out of the restaurant and waited in his car for the rest of the meeting because his partner was still finishing dinner. And so, like, they couldn't even leave, but he just stormed out to sit in the car. He refused to come back in the building. And I have thought about that ever since as an introduction to the party. And I wonder how often that happens. And it makes me sad for that. It's disappointing to me because I suspect that that happens more often than any of us would care to admit, even here in California. And, you know, if that was my first meeting ever, like if I had just seen a flyer and I was like, I'll check these guys out. And then I go to this meeting and it descends into this shouting match and a guy ends up storming out of the room. Would I have come back? I don't know. You know, was it just that I already had like 5 years of psyching myself up about this that I was willing to say, okay, I don't know what that was about. I'll try it again. And then was immediately made vice chair of the county affiliate. And then on we went, right?
Right.
Me being new to the whole thing, though, caused me to kind of fall into the orbit of the Mises Caucus, which is a controversial group in California and elsewhere.
So I'm sorry, in terms of the timeline, falling into when you became vice chair of the local chapter and falling into the orbit of the Mises Caucus, you said timeline-wise this around 2019, 2020?
Right, 2019, 2020, yep.
Yeah, okay.
This was as the Mises Caucus was really getting ramped up. They were heavy, heavy recruiting, lots of energy. And again, right, I'm coming in new to the state, I'm coming in new to libertarianism as a thing, and I thought to myself, man, this is where the energy's at. These guys are really making something happen.
Right.
You know, and from the outside, that's exactly what it looked like.
Right.
And unfortunately, that swung dark in a hurry, right? And it hit its peak in 2022. Everything fell apart. It was clear that leadership didn't know what they were doing. And it's caused some real damage. And those are the pieces that we're picking up now. And I say by we, I mean the Libertarian Party of California, not any caucus in specific.
Right.
Just that things got really messed up. Stuff got really, really destroyed. Donors withdrew. People canceled their membership. It was bad. So we're in the process of trying to build something new now from those ashes. That is the task that is before us.
So, and I'll let Hody jump in after this question. So you kind of got, you came in on that wave of enthusiasm, which is a story I hear from a lot of Mises folks, either the ones that are still in the Mises Caucus or the ones who have abandoned the Mises Caucus. And you could speak to this as much or as little as you want as well. Do you find that in your dealings with the folks out in your orbit in California, in your LP orbit in California, do you get a sense of like you just said, things kind of went south, like, suddenly. Do you view that as – is that something that you kind of sense being permeating throughout California's libertarian circles? do you feel there's still this hope of let's recapture what Mises brought to the table in 2019, 2020? Maybe it was derailed by some bad choices or some bad actors. Like, what's that sense that you get in your state out there?
Well, I think that it's important to be objective. I think that's the first thing. And I know that for a lot of people, that's a challenge.
Right.
Because a lot of people have been hurt. They've been really hurt. There were some people who got really, really grievously insulted by a lot of the stuff that the Mises Caucus did as they were trampling their way to the top. The energy of the Mises people, the desire to recruit on the part of the Mises people, those were good things.
Sure.
And they really swelled the ranks. They were really, I mean, if that energy could have been channeled in a positive direction, that would have been really, really great. Right. Unfortunately, it was not. And it became pretty clear, pretty quickly, especially almost immediately after 2022 and all the whole Reno, thing that, the Mises Caucus's recruiting efforts and their acquisition of power were inversely proportional. So as their leadership achieved leadership in the party, greater and greater leadership, all of their efforts at recruiting faded. They weren't building anything behind them. And so rather than rising to the top of the party on this growing pyramid of support, there were people were just flowing in at the bottom, what you wound up with was just a very small handful of people riding a bottle rocket to the top. Mm. And so it flipped, it flew to the top and then it exploded and it all got all over everybody. And that's a tragedy. It really is a tragedy.
That's an interesting thing because I haven't really heard it described the way you just have. And we've talked to a lot of folks about this. And by the way, for the folks watching this, if you have any questions for Lauren along the way, please hop on the chat, whatever platform you're on. We'll see it. We'll pass it along to Lauren. So feel free to drop your comments in the chat. But Lauren, did you see this because it was sort of like a conscious decision to not focus on recruiting once that leadership ascended? Or do you feel perhaps it was a matter of a lack of experience at running a political organization as opposed to running a takeover campaign?
I'm prepared to call that a little bit of both. Yeah, okay. I think a lot of it is, and I think that we all see it. Anybody who's spent any time around like city government sees this on a fairly regular basis. Some crusader person will storm into a seat on their local city government and then immediately get stars in their eyes about how they're an important person now. And then they abandon the people who were once their supporters. They start taking them all for granted. They start mistreating them, telling them to like go and do things that the supporters are not big fans of. And the supporters all start to question, what are we even still doing here?
Right.
And then those questions are met with derision. Just trust the plan. What do you mean you don't trust me now? You know, you're an impure follower, right? There's all of that weird quasi-cultic behavior that you can engage in there. Now, in practice, though, this means there's a lot of people in the party right now, today, in California and elsewhere, that are can be easily described, I think, as ex-Mises. And there are people, I think, that are generally like me. There are people who were attracted to the energy. They didn't really see any energy coming from any place else. And so they felt like, well, this is where the energy's at. I want to be active. I want to do something. These are the guys doing something. And then realized that something involved propelling a very small handful of people into leadership and then abandoning everyone behind them. But now they're here. And they still want to show up to meetings. They still believe in the broader principles of liberty. They're still freedom-oriented people, and they're young, you know. Be objective, right? There was a lot of youth that came into the party as a result of the Mises Caucus and its actions.
Yes.
That youth and that energy needs a place to go now. And so at this point, it is incumbent on what we can be called the old guard to really reach out to these people and help them learn the ins and outs of the party now. Free from wild Mises propaganda efforts and all that kind of thing. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of work that can be done. There are a lot of young people coming into the party who can do that work, but they need to be reached out to patiently because the peace is very fragile, especially here in California. This is a fragile peace here in California. And so it's incumbent on everybody to give each other some grace and to build forward into the future. There's no going back to anything. It's but there's room now to build something new going into the future. And I think the future is bright. I think there's a lot of promise. But it's going to require that this fragile piece hold long enough for everyone to get to know each other as people and stop trying to label each other and tell all those stories that all roll down to one word, right? The one word story, your Mises, your cathedral, your Prague. We use all these labels. They're lame. I hate the labels, right? Just deal with people as they are. Deal with people as people.
Right. Hody, do you have something for Lauren?
Yeah, a couple. I have one that I really want to ask, but first just like a personal one. I think for me, when I look at the Mises Caucus, and as much as you brought in, for every one you brought in, scared two off, you know, yeah. It was certainly, there were definitely new people. We've definitely had a total change. Unfortunately, didn't manage to quite get the numbers of the people who got driven out. And so I wonder for you, just out of curiosity, because I was like Mises sympathetic at first as well. Of course, there was people saying like, hey, that Charlottesville thing wasn't cool and this wasn't cool. And, you know, I remember endorsing Joshua Smith, whoopsie daisy on that one, but at one point. But, you know, that there is a point that all of us kind of hop off. And so just because I can relate to the journey, do you remember about what stage, like, you know, somewhere in between Charlottesville and Malagon tweeting from official accounts that Chase F's kids and then McArdle stealing a bunch of money? Because some people are still on that. The embezzlement was good, actually, thing, right?
Like, yeah, well,
where along that train journey did you go, oh, okay, maybe this is actually not what I had wanted to do or signed up to do?
It's going to sound very self-serving. And I don't want it to sound self-serving, but I will admit to some concerns right at the outset. I think that I was very sensitive to the taper of recruiting engagement. It seemed to be very, very critical. And part of this, I'm going to tell kind of a tangential story here. There's a, I have belonged to a variety of volunteer organizations, and I think that a number of us have, depending on what you do, right? PTA groups, booster clubs, church groups, whatever. You belong to some volunteer groups, and there is a cycle that happens in those groups. And I've seen that cycle firsthand. I've been, had to pick up the pieces in this cycle firsthand in other groups. And so I think that I was sensitive to the development of this cycle inside the Mises Caucus. I kind of saw it coming a little bit, but wasn't quite sure what to do about it until things had, in fact, fallen apart. The cycle goes like this, right? And I call it the monarch. It's the monarch effect, where you end up with one person in the organization that's doing everything. And that person takes control of everything. Maybe that person's super type A. Maybe that person is just hard to get along with or whatever. They're just super energetic. For whatever reason, this person ends up doing everything in the organization. They take it all for themselves. Right. And a lot of people are willing to let that happen because for a variety of reasons, either, you know, a little bit of light laziness or the monarch is somebody who's just hard to get along with. And so if they want to do it, okay, I mean, you can do it, I guess. And so slowly other people, sort of the B tier in the organization, all slowly draw away from the monarch who's doing everything. They're still there, but the monarch just continues to stiff arm them out of anything. And ironically, it's at that point in the organization's sort of history, and people will look back on this nostalgically, and they will say, man, that was when we were really getting stuff done. This thing was running like a well-oiled machine. And it was so good back then without any concept of why it was good back then. The reason it was good back then is because one person was burning themselves up doing everything. And so then at some point, that person vanishes. And when they go, they go. They're just gone, right? They burn out. Their kid graduates from school. They get accused of embezzling, right? I've seen all of these things. I've seen all these things pre-Libertarian Party, right? Like, I've seen all of this stuff happen. And when that happens, the monarch just disappears, just vanishes. And the monarch was doing a bunch of stuff, and no one really knows what the monarch was doing. The monarch wasn't letting anybody in. The monarch wasn't sharing any processes. The monarch wasn't sharing any notes. And so that B tier of activist people in the organization start to try and pick up those pieces, and then they get attacked by rank and file in the organization because they're not doing things as smoothly as they used to be. Things appear to be in chaos. Things appear to be very disorganized. And then after a while, that burns out that B tier of activists, and you end up with that slowly condensing down to one new monarch who finally says, fine, I'll just do it. And then the cycle continues. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So I think I watched that cycle play out in the Mises Caucus, like a couple of times. Once with Angela and then again with Adrian, where you end up with one person who's doing it all and stiff-arming a lot of other people out for whatever reason. I'm not going to try and be in the heads of these people. But in practice, then, when that person's gone, then there's chaos. There's a potential for chaos. I wasn't ready for it when Angela did it. I was ready for it when Adrian did it. So that prompted me to run for chair. I had a variety of people come to me and say, hey, man, we need somebody that can run for chair that's broadly cool, that nobody hates, right? Not everybody likes, but nobody hates, and somebody who has a sense of how to maybe pick up the pieces and move forward into something else. And so that ultimately is the goal. That's what I'm trying to do here in California. And if this fragile piece can hold, I think that we can get there and render the party less takeoverable in the future as a result. That's
actually is going to lead to my next question, because I knew you had that as like listed as one of the goals that you had. I've seen a lot of proposals for making the party less takeoverable, and it's a tough balance, right? Because like, if you give too much power to people to just kick people out for getting out of line, then they can abuse that power. And then on the other hand, if you just let them say whatever, they're going to go LPNH on you, and you're just going to be like, oh, no, this is a disaster, right? Like, and there is a balance. I don't know what that balance is, but I'm kind of excited because you've put some thought into it. You've gotten to ride the wave of a takeover, so you kind of have insider information and like knowledge, right? Like of how that goes. So I'm very curious as to like how what your ideas are as to how to make the party a little less takeoverable.
Well, ultimately it comes down to personal projects. That's really what it comes down to. I came to call it the team. I just wanted to call it the team and get people on the team where the team was going to be doing stuff. Now, what exactly each person was doing was entirely up to them. This was, and I admit, I guess we can call this privilege. I am California privileged because there were a couple of things that, while unfortunate, worked in our favor here. First, at this last convention, we rolled over the entire executive committee, which is rare. Usually these elections are supposed to be staggered, but enough people had resigned that we wound up having to fill all the spots. So an entirely new executive committee was elected at this last convention, which is good because it means that there was no real holdover from the previous executive committee. Mm. Second, everybody that came on board, my first question to them was, what do you want to do? Not what do you think we should do? Lots of people have an opinion about what we should do. And we is a pretty awful word that way that people use to try and get other people to do stuff that they want to do, but they don't actually want to do it. So my question was, what do you want to do? And so everybody who came on board with a project, a specific project that they wanted to do. One guy said, I want to make recruiting phone calls. Awesome. One guy said, I want to stand up a new county affiliate. Awesome. One lady said, I want to help a affiliate that has folded, like restore, like, you know, stand back up again. Great. And by affiliate, I mean a county affiliate. I know that can be, that's a term. I had a lady say, I want to do social media, right? I want to start doing, you know, little 1 minute videos and explainers. I want to really get a coherent social media strategy for the Libertarian Party of California, which it has not previously had. So lots of these little things, and people kind of self-sorted this way. And a couple of people said, hey, I really like that social media thing. I want to help produce content for that. Or we had a guy come in from Fresno, Francisco Alanis, who's one of the few Latino libertarians out there. And he's a manager at a raisin packing plant, which is super Fresno. But he's bilingual. And he came on board and said, hey, I want to do translations. I want to do outreach translations. I want to really start doing stuff in Spanish, right? Now, so everybody got to pick their project. Which right. was fine because there was no work going on anyway. We were completely defibrillating work. Like it was dead. We were shocking it back to life by everybody doing a project. And over time, my hope, my intention, my goal is for all of these different projects to slowly braid together as people realize that there is synergy between these projects. And you're going to be able, and maybe your project relates to this other project. And so you start talking to this other person on the executive committee. And in practice, what that does, this team model that I'm trying to build here, is that it turns the executive committee into a real working board. And it does that right up front, that you don't join the executive committee so that you can be another vote for the chair and his pet project. You join the executive committee because you have something you want to do. And my job as the chair is to help you set up metrics and goals and chart your path to success. And then I cheer for you while you run your race. It's not my job to tell you what to do. You're a libertarian. If I told you what to do, you wouldn't do it anyway. So you pick the thing that you want to do. That's the message to everybody. That's my message to everybody. That's my message to the whole rank and file of the Libertarian Party of California. So, if there's a project you want to tackle, do it. You can just do things. You don't need anybody's permission to do that.
Right.
And I will help as far as I am able.
Now, in that model, Lauren, I'm hearing, I hear a lot of, please don't take this as an insult because it's not intended as such. I hear a lot of corporatism in the sense of the way you're setting up your, you're delegating, I don't want to say authority, but you're delegating responsibility, perhaps is a better way to phrase it, right? You're saying, hey, you know, I want to set up everyone to succeed because if everyone succeeds, then the LPCA succeeds, right? So you're,
right.
So you know, now in your setting this up as the chair, and I like what you said, being a data analyst myself, setting up metrics, you have your KPIs, you're going to be measured by what you want to achieve and what you're good at. I get all that. As the chair, though, are you sort of putting up guardrails as to what it is people are trying to do? Like, I hear you. You don't want to dictate what needs to get done. But and I'll put up this comment because Sarah said this, you know, she goes, all PLNH on you, laugh face from she gets it.
That conversation is going to get had, absolutely, right? And this is part of setting up these metrics, right? So there's three or four people who are kind of coalescing together to want to do social media. Great, right? Social media communications. Somebody's got to do it,
right?
But as part of my discussions with them. Right, then this is my opportunity to say, okay, what you need to do is develop some content guidelines, right? So you need to generate some objective rules for what you're going to do. Like, let's not celebrate the death of anyone who's died in the last generation, right? Mm. Which should be a low bar, but this is where we're at, right?
Right.
So it's stuff like that, right? And here in California, especially, California is so broken. That there's lots of stuff that California social media can do, should do, that's California specific. So like California social media doesn't really have to address federal concerns at all. California's got plenty of stuff to shout about here, right? An entire city just burned to the ground. There was no water in the fire hydrants. We could be seeing gas at $8 a gallon by the end of the year because a refinery is about to go offline. In fact, the state is attempting to like broker a sale of an oil refinery in order to keep a supply of gasoline in the state. It's wow. Berserk. It's completely out of control. Every summer, power lines go down and huge fires start. It's a disaster. There's a whole bunch of stuff in California that's just an outright disaster. There's a reason that everybody side-eyes immigrants from California when you move to another state and you say, I'm from California, and everybody goes, you stay over there, son. don't bring that California over here, you know.
Right.
Because California's completely screwed up. Should the LPCA's social media feeds reflect that and be targeting Sacramento? Yes, absolutely. Do we need to wade into a whole bunch of federal concerns? I don't think we do. I think there's plenty to be concerned about right here in California. And that keeps us out of a lot of the hot button craziness that New Hampshire is really making a whole bunch of mess with, and probably Louisiana in the other direction.
Yeah.
There is no need to hit either of those extremes here in California. But that's a conversation that needs to get had with the social media people as they set it up, and not something that is inflicted on them. Not something where you're assigned to be the social media people and here are the rules that you must follow. But talk to me, you social media people who have volunteered to do this, who are following your passion into social media. Talk to me about what it is you want to see your content rules be, and let's talk about that. Let me be your sounding board for that. and just to give you so that it, if you can explain it to me and have it make sense, then yay, right? If you're explaining it to me and I say that doesn't make sense, well, then we need to continue to have this conversation. And as I follow up with folks, you know, going forward, monthly, whatever, just to check in, how are things going? Then yeah. I mean, little small, minor corrections can be made. Hey, saw this thing, got a complaint. I've already had to deal with it. Again, this is a low bar. It feels like something that shouldn't need to be said, but one of the promises that I made to my entire executive committee is I'm going to have your back. Like, I'm going to defend you to other people. I am not going to just let you be a punching bag for other members, for other angry members in the thing. This is me recognizing the danger that I've already kind of laid out in my little, you know, monarch cycle thing, right? Where this might look a little chaotic. Rank and file people are going to start to attack the executive committee to say, you're not doing exactly the thing that I think you should be doing right now. The chair needs to have the back of the XCOM for that. I need to be able to intercede right. in moments like that, have phone calls with angry rank and file members, allay their fears, assuage their suspicions, right, and say, no, no, we're all working in the same direction. Your enemy is not inside the party. Your enemy is not sitting next to you at meetings. Your enemy is sitting in Sacramento. And that's where your wrath needs to be directed. Let's talk about how to direct your wrath there. That's the hope, right? The chair, I'm the referee for everybody, for everything, right? I'm the one who steps in to help you stay on track. I'm the one who helps shield you from people who want to yank you off track by dragging you into some terrible mud wrestle about some fine point of libertarian doctrine, right?
Right.
That's my job is to get stuff out of the way of people who want to do work.
Right. And of course, the best umpires, the best referees are the ones you never notice and the sure. ones you never have to remember their name or anything. That's an old sports adage. Odie, anything else for Lauren on his new role in California?
Nah, I'm excited to get to the free-for-all portion of our evening.
Yeah, so Lauren, thank you so much. Go ahead.
Well, actually,
please.
Before we do that, I want to address Hody. I want to talk about being untakeoverable. Sorry, I want to loop around. I want to loop back around to this. As individual people are working on individual projects, then it doesn't really matter what your factional allegiance is, because you're doing work. There are always going to be affinity groups. There are always going to be factional allegiances. There are always going to be people who are friends, like quietly and subtly off screen. There's nothing wrong with that. What makes that bad is when you have a specific thing you want to do. And you couple that with a desire for control of the whole thing so that you make the whole thing the thing that you want to do. Does that make sense?
Right.
So if you have the opportunity to do the thing that you want to do, and I had a couple of people who were very specific as I tried to pitch this idea to them, and they were like, well, you can't let the Mises people in because they think the ballot access is dumb and they won't do it. They won't do that work. That doesn't matter. Then they can do something else. Right? They can do the thing that they are passionate about doing. There's a lot of Mises people who think ballot access is a dumb idea. In California, that's not really a huge issue because our ballot access rules are reasonably lenient. And so that's not a terribly big deal. But there's lots of other work to do. And the only reason that it's a problem that the Mises people don't like ballot access is that they also wanted control and then would have made it where nobody can work on ballot access because we're all doing this because we're in charge of what we say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And in terms of untakeoverable, I think, and Hody, please step in and tell me if I'm wrong. I think we may have been talking about the sort of like quote unquote hostile takeover of a party where, you know, people are encouraged, like the old what happened here in New York with Howard Stern 40 years ago, right? This was like everybody, it takes $20 to become a member of the Libertarian Party. Pay your $20, show up one day to Albany, vote Howard Stern in, and then disappear. We don't care if we see you again, right?
Right.
So I think maybe in terms of untakeoverable, I think maybe something like that, where you're talking about like a tactical, we're going to take the reins.
Well, I mean, it's awfully hard to defend against that, just based on the way that people's state bylaws are set up. A lot of people have vulnerabilities like that, and that's going to require hard lessons learned, I think, in order before those holes get plugged. And some holes probably do need to get plugged in a variety of states all over the place.
Oh, sure.
My primary focus, though, is on keeping specific factions from being able to just take over and then drive other people out of the party, because that's totally what happens, right?
Right.
A faction will take over, and then they start setting up all these litmus tests for activity, and then they start insulting you on official channels if you aren't towing their line or you have a concern or a question. And after a while, people leave, right? How you pointed it out too, right? For everybody that you bring in, two people bail. That needs to stop happening. And that only happens with a chair, for better or for worse, that is fair and doesn't have a thumb on the scale, that isn't setting the pace, that whose pace is you run your race and I will cheer for you while you do and get stuff out of your way while you run it. And let's see. This is a free market response. This is the free market of ideas. This is letting the invisible hand rule a little bit.
Right.
The action of the executive committee in the state of California. And I'm actually really excited to see where it goes, because it means that the thing that somebody wants to do, they actually want to do, and they haven't been voluntold to do it. And I'm really excited to see what people come up with and where this goes.
Yeah, I really like that as an idea, because what you got here is a positive thing. Libertarians were so many negatives. Shouldn't do this, shouldn't do this, shouldn't do this. Some of those are good, right? Shouldn't kill innocent people, shouldn't take people's stuff, of course, all those things, right? But I think libertarians lack a lot of times because we get so ground into what we shouldn't do that we don't occupy ourselves with what we should do. And, you know, I can tell you after leaving, you know, the Libertarian Party is a part of the takeover and, you know, I got out of the way, that in doing good in my community, it's been an amazing thing. And it, like you said, it keeps me occupied that I don't have time for, you know, all this other negative stuff.
Right.
And if we can get like a Mises Caucus faction to be like, hey, you guys like Austrian economics? Let's get you doing some stuff about economics and talking about that and writing. And then you've got this other, you know, faction that's like, we really care about like trans rights. And there's over 520 laws going through against trans people just right now. You know, let's get them on the comms. Let's get them doing their thing. And then everybody's where they should be. And like, you know, I hate to use like, you know, fall on my theological background, but become a true body, right? Everybody's doing different things,
right,
but we are all working towards the same goal. And right. I think that this is something that I hear a lot. People think about takeover and they're like, how are we going to bylaws our way out of being takeoverable? I don't know that it's possible.
No.
Just like the law is not there to, I mean, whenever a politician wants to ignore the law or write themselves a check from the Fed, they can do it, right? Like they're going to find a way around it to do it. And so creating a positive culture, I think is actually really key to this whole thing.
It sure is. But it's also really kind of foreign to a lot of libertarian thinking, right?
You
run into a lot of curmudgeons in the Libertarian Party, and that's okay. A lot of these people have been betrayed multiple times by the system and other people. And so, yeah, I get it. There's a lot of very tentative trust. Again, I use the term fragile peace, and I think that's a very, very accurate thing. My response to that is relentless optimism.
Good.
So it's relentless optimism.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what people do. Doing the thing that they are passionate about doing.
Yeah, and that's setting people up to succeed, which is fantastic, which means the group succeeds. All right, some quick comments. Sean says, so less of a steering committee and more of an everybody get out and push committee, is Sean's comment there.
Yeah. I mean, or just, you know, everybody run your race, right? Mm. Get in your groove and do it, do whatever that thing is. Work happens in inverse proportion to infighting, right? If everybody's working, nobody fights. And the reason everybody fights is that no one's working.
Right.
And so you know, as people just get to work doing whatever, and it can be very small, right? It can just be like, I want to make 10 phone calls this week. Bro, make your 10 phone calls. Absolutely do it. And I suspect that there's going to be some very, very small goals like that. And that's fine, because work has to start someplace. And one of the great problems that we have is somebody will say, well, I want to work on ballot access. They have no idea how to do that. Or right. I want to work on recruiting. They have no idea how to do that. I want to recruit a candidate. You have no idea how to do that. And all the different things, the steps that are involved in that. But start doing something, anything, right? And I will help you talk it through, right? Whatever it is. It could be a very small goal. That's okay. And when
yeah.
we reach that goal, we'll talk about the next goal and we'll go to the next one.
Sure.
Without me trying to inflict a vision on you, I mean, if something doesn't make sense, I'm going to let you know. We're going to talk about it. Right, we'll talk through it.
Yeah.
But broadly speaking, it is my faith, my goal, my hope that, again, people will realize that all these different jobs, all these different functions, they synergize together, because they do. Once they're actually going, they will synergize together, and then real activism will just get started, and then we'll be running again. But yeah. You can't, Hody, you're absolutely right. You can't bylaws your way out of a situation like the one California is in. You can't pass enough rules to ensure that this never happens again. All you can do is start building and get that action moving and just get the ship going and then stay on the ship. You got to build your way out. You can't legislate your way out.
Sounds like sage advice, and won't comment more. Lauren sounds very positive. That's a good start.
Ah, Mr. Blue Boyle, you're the man. Thank you.
So you're certainly winning some people over tonight, Lauren. All right, everyone, you're watching Free for All. We're going to switch over to our topic section of the show. But if you have any questions for Lauren or comments, feel free to make them right here on Free for All. Go into the chat of any platform you're on, X, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook. Send us your questions or comments, and we'll be more than happy to throw them up. And if you've got a question for anybody on the show tonight, please send it our way. All right, guys. One of the things I want to talk about, because this is always a big concern for me, is the issue of free speech and censorship in this country. And I just want to throw it, like, to set sort of the, if we want to work on the one line topic for this next segment, for the next 20 minutes or so, is, you know, we're all aware of, Orwell and his, you know, the doublespeak. And we always thought the censorship danger would come from government, but I would propose that Orwell had it half right, that really it's the people that are turning on their own free speech rights right now. And that we, the people, while there's still free speech and censorship danger lurking in the government, of course, but I think the greater danger right now is the one we pose to ourselves, where a majority of Americans do not view free speech as an absolute right. They do not have much concern if they feel their free speech is being curtailed for some, quote, noble purpose. So in the context of that, I wanted to talk about this Screen Act that is making its way through Congress right now. It's been proposed. Let me just pull up my notes here. SCREEN, which is an acronym, believe it or not, for Shielding Children's Retinas from Egregious Exposure on the Net. Act.
This is the dumbest acronym ever. AI was involved. AI had to have been involved.
And, you know, initially, I have to tell you, I'll be painfully honest here. When I first heard this and I saw her screeching online, I honestly thought the author of this bill was Marjorie Taylor Greene. Somewhat shockingly, one of the main co-sponsors was Mike Lee, the senator out of Utah, who maybe 10 years ago I would have told you libertarian-ish, right? He seemed to be on that path, maybe Rand Paul-ish type. Lately, I've seen a lot of authoritarianism and switching over to the full-blown MAGA. And to me, guys, this kind of is part of that. This, to me, is part of that, because what they want out of this is essentially to impose on platforms, on websites, on, you know, they want to pose the burden to make sure that minors are not consuming what they think is harmful material. I mean, look, we can assume it's pornography, but it's not explicitly stated in the act. It could be anything. It could be like dangerous political thoughts. Maybe they're having those dangerous libertarian thoughts, and we have to protect the children from them.
My favorite in reading the material was excretions.
Yeah.
Material involving excretions.
Right.
Was potentially something that would fall under this act. That's a weird word.
And it also kind of shows you where the authors perhaps had their minds when they were writing this. But Hody, let me kick it over to you. How do you view this? Certainly, I know you're someone who has the best interests of children at heart. Why, as a libertarian, would you be against the Screen Act?
Yeah, this is another one. They always phrase it to sound really good. Oh, you want kids to view pornography? You just want to shove it down their throats? I guess that's the only reason you could be opposed to this. Something that I have said, I don't know if I've said this on the show before, because you and I have gone over a lot of long acts before.
Yeah.
Always beware short acts more. Because a long act is trying to be way too precise, and to fix a long act, like, for example, in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, we had price controls on agriculture. Right. And it's as simple as deleting it, right? Like, get rid of it. This is, there's not one instance of this that you can just delete and fix it. And so, for example, one of the things that would get banned by this is any anything that is patently offensive to minors, right? Or with respect to what is suitable for minors. So whatever they believe is offensive to minors will be banned by this, or will be something that is, you have to put something up, forces you to verify with an identification, a government identification. They're actually, they do not actually say all the ways in which, they're just saying that you gotta. So I guess some type of like ID license, something like that, that that says that you're adult. Of course, we love giving the government information, you know, when we're like that. But this is also giving them the power over IP addresses. You see a section here, the technology verification measures. This is a way that to track people, and they're actually making that blatant to let it know that we are tracking children. We are tracking where they're at, and we will mark those IP addresses as having minors at the household, right? The rationale for this, if I'm to cut into like the biggest problem that I have for this, is Mike Lee himself decides to cite a study from the Kaiser Family Foundation that found that filters don't work on 1 in 10 pornography websites that are accessed intentionally, and they don't work in 1 in 3 pornography sites that are accessed unintentionally. That last line is not even vaguely close to true and not anything that is stated. Furthermore, the study does not say 1 in 10 sites acted intentionally. If you read the study, which I have a great link to, but if you have the study, it's 1 in 10 websites just in general aren't blocked yet, and that's because they keep cropping up. What can you do? Well, you as a parent can block them, right? Like, you just say, like, oh, here's a site that didn't get blocked. Let's go ahead and add it. These things are cumulative. The results of the study, you would be hard to press to even believe that he's decided to use this study, because the entire result of the study is talking about how when you screen this type of information from children, that they no longer get access to health information. Stuff that was disincluded. I'm just going to scroll down the list. Stuff that was filtered out by the results from these sites, including information about diabetes, about diets, about the effects of drugs and alcohol. Even if you're not looking to score them, you're just looking to say what is like ecstasy, alcohol. If you're struggling with suicide and depression, these healthcare sites are actually getting censored by these things. And in fact, the 1 in 3 number that Mike Lee is using that manages to make it through these, those are safe sex health sites that children are looking up to understand how to protect themselves better during sex. So while he's identifying this as a problem, it's the study's actually saying it's a problem that kids now are having less access through these type of blockers to finding out about things that they really need to know about. And the damages, the whole results of this study is that the damages done to these children with these blockers in a voluntary fashion is actually worse than just having them accidentally view pornography and being able to explain what they saw and helping them through that with therapy and psychological assistance, you know? And so this is what Mike Lee is citing here, is he's taking a study. There's lies, damned lies, and statistics. And then there's like damned lies about statistics. And that's what Mike Lee is doing here. I've gone off a little bit. This is really kind of all I have to say about this Green Act, but I'm trying to give everybody the sense about, not only is this like massively authoritarian and invasive and can be abused and is obtuse, but on a very strict level, even if this were a voluntary society doing it, it's a bad idea. According to the study, it itself cites.
Right.
This is not a good thing we should be doing.
Right. And just in general, when you turn to – look, and I think all of us here, there's a reason why we're libertarians, right? Sean says patently offensive, so open source is offensive, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm. Only if you patent your offense.
Right. And Jeremiah, Jeremiah, I appreciate you trying to follow the show rule about four-letter words, sir. I want you to know, Jeremiah, we appreciate you for trying. Jeremiah, maybe the Flarkin problem is that conservatives never supported free speech. They just wanted to say what they wanted, and they'll cheer for, quote, eradicating from public life anything they don't like. And again, we've seen this in the past, right? We've had Reno versus the ACLU. We had who's the other? Ashcroft versus the ACLU. That failed. And then one of the viewers saying, "Hey, for all those of us old enough to remember, sounds like what the MRC wanted."
Remember when Tipper Gore wanted to stick labels on all the records, right? Yes. And those were the ones kids bought because that meant it was something cool. That meant there was something really cool on that album. That's right.
Yeah, and it really is the Streisand effect, but for this dangerous material. And I don't know, Lauren Nahody, I think we can all agree on this, that even if you accept the existence of the state, of the government, even in a minarchist fashion, I think we can all agree that if it exists, it shouldn't exist to solve societal problems. It should exist to protect the rights of the citizenry, right? So,
I think what we see here, this is a great example of politics being downstream from culture.
Yeah.
There are a lot of parents and a lot of families who are very aware of screen time and are very aware of what their kids are doing. I know a lot of parents whose kids didn't get a phone until they were like actual teenagers, and whose screen time was very closely monitored. That their parents are very alert to this. And so now here comes government, like a day late, saying, okay, now we're going to pass a law that will basically force everyone to do what you parents, most of you, many of you, are already doing,
right?
Paying attention to what your kids are looking at and making sure that stuff is screened out and so on. This is the worst impulse of government, is to try and jump into a thing that is already happening and pretend like they're leading this charge.
And I mean, you're 100% right, Lauren. And the only thing I'll say is we've seen this movie before. We've seen what happens when government institutes censorship or requires censorship, even for the most noble, even if you accept it at face value.
Well,
they want to protect children.
Even beyond the censorship concerns, there's a broader concern here about common sense regulation, because that's totally the defense here, right?
Right.
This is just common sense regulation on this thing, but common sense ain't common, right? You got to define all of these terms for all of this.
Right.
There is no such thing as common sense regulation. There just isn't. And so to try and create rules about this, you're undermining individuals' ability to choose, which means you're undermining individuals' ability to learn, and that's got substantial societal problems all the way down the line.
Yeah, no, you're right. And one of the things I wanted to point out about this Screen Act is it flies directly in the face of one of President Trump's royal edicts, otherwise known as an executive order, which he issued his first day in office on January 20th. It was an executive order titled Restoring Freedom of Speech and Ending Federal Censorship, aiming to secure Americans' right to constitutionally protected speech. So isn't that interesting? He was
and what is constitutionally protected speech? All of it.
Exactly.
There's not any constitutionally unprotected speech. There's no such thing. And unfortunately, it does put us as libertarians in a position of defending some stuff that might be pretty gross.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, defending free speech, you don't need to defend like normal speech. That never really needs to be defended. It's objectionable speech that you end up having to defend, which means that you're going to find yourself on the side of some scoundrels and some weirdos and some freak shows. And that's okay, because they're just living their life, man.
Yeah, and look.
It doesn't hurt me that that's like that.
Yeah, look, I think, Lauren, maybe you and I, considering the snow I see on the combined roofs here, maybe not so much Hody, but certainly I can remember as a young man, as a adult, a young, old 13, young adult, whatever, you know, you had the cases of Larry Flint making his way to the Supreme Court. Another major case that is less known, Al Goldstein, the owner and publisher of Screw Magazine, who was, if it could be even possible, even more detestable than Larry Flint was in terms of the pornography. But both were major 1A cases that needed to be defended, even though it turned your stomach. And it turned your stomach, like, even as a young man debating these things on the Jesuit campus, saying, no, they have, you know, I'd rather deal with the dangers of those guys being able to spout off their obscenities than having the government decide what's obscene for me.
Absolutely. And the hardest thing about freedom, the hardest thing, this is the right. hardest thing about freedom is getting your head around the idea that somebody is going to use their freedom to do something you think is stupid.
Right.
Or offensive or even self-destructive. But as long as that person's not hurting anybody else and that person's not damaging anybody's property, you can't get in that person's life and force them to live their life your way. You just can't. And for you to do so, it requires that you put into place some really vicious systems that you're not always going to be in charge of. And you're not going to like it when those systems come for you.
One of those things in politics, Hody and I have said it many times, is like it's amazing to me that politicians can't imagine the privileges they want for themselves going to their opponents, which to me is always the litmus test. Do you want to pass a new law? Great. Tell me how you feel if your worst, most horrific person that you can imagine had the same privilege.
And don't we live in that place right now?
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. The government should X. The government run by Trump. Right? This is the power you want to hand to him? The government needs to do X. The government run by Trump? The government filled with Trump stooges? The government that's doing all of this right now? Do you want them to have that power? Oh, well, I mean, we want the government to do this, but in a safe and sane way with a proper, you know, progressive at the helm. No, come on.
Yeah. I didn't know freedom and people doing stuff that sucks. Well, I don't know who Summer Smith is, Sarah, but kudos to Summer for that. It's a nice quote. I'll keep that one in mind. All right, quick roundabout. Hody, Screen Act is still in the formative stages in Congress. Do you think it gets passed or not? Prediction time.
Oh, man. Republicans do control everything, and they do like to pretend to love kids a lot. I'm going to say a horrifying thing, and I guess I'll go yes. Trump has expended a lot of his political capital with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, but I think that this is just vague enough that I think Republicans will be on board with it, and I think it will be very easy to smear anybody that's against it. Like, to be clear, like with what I said earlier, these filters they want to use for every one, like site, just looking at the filters they've got for every one site about sexual assault, like that depicted sexual assault that got blocked, 50 sites were blocked that had to do with identifying if you were sexually assaulted and reporting that you were sexually assaulted. Like I said, like it's easy to smear people this way, guys. Like it's easy to say, like, oh, what you want kids to know. I'm saying the exact opposite. I'm saying the exact opposite. I want this because, like, I do not want this because I want to protect our kids. I want them to have the maximum amount of information. Like, government's really bad at this. But yeah, as far as prediction goes, I'm gonna reluctantly say yes because, unfortunately, I just don't think the Democrats have the spine to be able to stand up and say and get into the details like we do about this. Right. And that's, unfortunately, the only people that the Republicans have to overcome is the weakest spined party that I could possibly imagine.
Lauren?
I'm going to be relentlessly optimistic and say and say this will pass and then get overturned in the courts. We'll get another Larry Flint thing.
Oh.
The ACLU will recover from its like vampiric torpor and we'll decide that it exists again for a reason. And this will get overturned in the courts. This will be ruled unconstitutional.
Lauren, I happen to agree with you. That was going to be my answer. I think it gets passed especially if it gets done before the midterm elections. I think it gets passed because there'll be pictures of kids on every time sure. There's a discussion. But I think it does not stand up to Supreme Court muster at all. It's too vague the way it's written right now. Anything can apply to it. It's not a narrow focus thing. I think it gets shot down immediately. Even if it does get passed, which I think it might. All right. Well, this has been a great show, fellas. I want to thank Lauren Dean, the new newly elected chair for the Libertarian Party of California, for joining Free for All. Lauren, you're always welcome to come back. Please give us either a website or an X handle, something. Plug the LP of California where folks can reach out to you.
All right, well, ca.lp.org. We're in the process of rebuilding our website, so please pardon our dust. That's one of the pieces we're trying to pick up. But ca.lp.org is the place to start. And then the again, I wish that I had. I mean, you could find Libertarian Party of California on a variety of social media outfits, but again, we're trying to recover control of a lot of this stuff. So be patient with us while we sort that out.
I'm sure we will. Hoedster, always good to have you on board, brother. You know we love you here. And until next time, right here on grumblingsmedia.com, next Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us again for the next episode of Free For All. Until then, this has been Big John for my co-host, Hody Johnson, our special guest, Lauren Dean. Catch you all next week. Peace, everyone.